This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and you know, what I love about doing this show is all the wonderful ways that we actually find our guests here on the program. And in this case, this is a great story. I found our illustrious guest at a book launch for a dazzling celebrity, and that would be Pamela Wallin, Senator Pamela Wallin, put on by the wonderful Rebecca Eckler. And in fact, there were no chairs available. It was totally packed. And this wonderful person wearing a very colorful outfit, whose diminutive stature was only outweighed by her very big and beautiful personality, and she's just gorgeous. And she invited me to sit down in the only chair that was available beside her, and I very readily and happily accepted. When I found out who she was, I knew it was kismet that we would meet. So let me tell you now about Helen Goldstein, who has been called the godmother of yoga in Toronto by the press, and whose incredible yoga center, the Yoga Studio, which she opened on a whim, quickly became Canada's largest and most popular yoga facility. She created an unheard-of model by offering many different styles of yoga and movement all under one roof. She held the first ecstatic dance classes, and she hosted some of the top teachers and gurus in the world. The studio attracted international celebrities and spawned many of the great yoga teachers in Toronto. Wallpaper magazine called it one of the best 10 studios in the world. She was the subject of a documentary called Second Chance, and she's been a frequent guest on numerous global media outlets. In 1995, Helen Goldstein was one of the first Canadians to be personally certified by Dr. Deepak Chopra to teach his form of meditation, and she had the honor of introducing him twice to an audience of over 2,500 people. Pretty cool. She's had raucous dinners with Carolyn Miss and the legendary Wayne Dyer, and a more subdued one with her mentor, the late Barbara Marks Hubbard. She was a guest at an over-the-top yoga fundraiser hosted by an influential yoga doyen in Bel Air, Beverly Hills, and attended by Hollywood yogis and yoginis. It's all in her upcoming book, which I devoured and loved. It's fabulous, by the way. And we are all getting a sneak peek of it today. Recently, she also, and we'll talk to her about this later in the show, she created a unique line of skincare, and she's working on a new life-altering project, which I'm going to ask her about as well. As just mentioned, she's written a funny, raunchy, irreverent memoir about her 50-plus years in her quest for enlightenment, and she's still questing, she says, and 15 years managing the teachers at her yoga studio. She has no intention of retiring quietly, and she's in her 70s. Helen Pack Goldstein, what a delight to have you here. Welcome to Finding Your Bliss.
What an honor to be here. And, you know, I have to say, I'm going to be honest with you. One of the reasons that I was so happy for you to sit in front of me is because of your hair. I had this shallow. I loved your hair, and it was anything I could do to reach out and go like this. It was so, I loved it. I loved sitting behind you and just, you know, doing that, because I've never been able to do that. So that's why I was very happy. Aww. Come sit here.
My hairdresser will love that. Thank you. Helen, congratulations on your upcoming book. It's fascinating, colorful, very funny, engaging, and I felt like I was on a roller coaster. I had to stop to catch my breath. And for anyone out there who has any interest in yoga or meditation or celebrities and wants to see a behind-the-scene glimpse of someone who has rubbed shoulders with the greatest celebrity yoginis and celebrities that matter, from Deepak Chopra to Bikram from Bikram Hot Yoga, Helen has seen and done it all. She's traveled the world and she lived the most fascinating life. And I actually see this book as a film, Helen. It's so sprawling and epic. But could you tell us more about The Brainchild and what finally made you just do it?
It was just when I started writing it, I was really, really angry and at the person who ripped me off for hundreds of thousands of dollars and ruined my life financially then. And it was not a good thing to write something when you're really angry, depressed, and miserable. And it was almost like a revenge book against the whole crap that, you know, the yoga thing and all these false gurus and all of that stuff. Yes. So it wasn't a funny book at the time, even though it is funny now. As a matter of fact, my editor, Guy Crittenden, who is amazing, said that even on the third editing, he was still laughing out loud. Even though he'd read it and edited. So I needed to take a break and get my life together and just stop being so angry, because it's not good to write a book if you consider yourself a yogi, somebody who's trying to be a better person, to want to smack somebody in the face. So it took that long, and I picked it up every so often, and I thought, I'm still too angry. I'm still too angry. So last year, I thought, and here's the other thing. Tara Green, who's an amazing tarot reader, I don't know if you know her. She's wonderful. Kept saying, you've got to write a book. You've got to write a book. And I have a lot of friends who are, you know, most of my friends have an awareness and they're psychic and they're healers and stuff. And where's your book? Where's your book? And then I finally said, okay, like I'm getting on in age. But here's the funny part, Judy. In the book, at the beginning of it, I talk about how I inadvertently and not on purpose wound up living in Montreal.
Yes.
With a drug addict and her pimp. And I had it edited in California first. And this woman came to say goodbye to me. I was leaving. My kids live in California. I was leaving. And my daughter was there. And she has the two children. And, you know, she lives a pretty conventional life. Mm. And the woman who was editing said, well, what do you think about your mother living with a drug addict and a pimp? And my daughter turned to me and said, Mother, you lived with a drug addict and a pimp.
Oh my God.
And I said, well, just for a short time until I knew what they, I didn't know what they were doing. I was young. I was 19. And when I finally finished the book and I brought the manuscript and I said, do you want to read it? She said, no, I know enough about you. I don't want to know anymore. I said, it's not all crazy. She said, that's not my memory. So,
wow. Well, you were there during Expo. You were there during 1967. And you hung out with the drag queens before that was even a fashionable thing or a thing. And I mean, yeah. You've led just like a wild child, I felt at the beginning.
Wild.
Just wild and unorthodox, yeah. And marched to your own drummer always. But I want to go back a little bit, because you had a bit of a tumultuous beginning.
Your
parents were Holocaust survivors.
Yeah.
Even though you were born in Toronto, as you said.
No, I wasn't. I was born in Germany.
You were born in Germany. Okay.
I was born in Germany.
Oh,
and my parents, like 2 years after they met.
Wow.
Yeah.
And they had, and I know one of your parents, I think your father was one of 16 brothers and sisters, because there were two families, and there's just so much. And you've talked about it being a little bit crazy.
A little.
And even I'm thinking about the guy that got away, the love of your life, the soulmate, how he came, a wonderful story in the book, how he stayed with you and your family. You kind of warned him that there's going to be shoes being thrown and there's going to be a lot of action. It's not going to be like a normal household. And sadly, that you said that after that visit, when he came to stay with you, and that it ended, you never saw him again. And so that, like, there's a lot of hard things that happened to you.
Yeah.
And yet somehow you survived. You were married twice. And the best thing to come out of your first marriage was your two children. You also had a fantastic nickname for your second husband, who you referred to as the husband. And you talk about how you had a really great marriage until you didn't. But even before you got married, you always led a very unconventional life. You flew to London on long weekends as a young woman and hung out at Carnaby Street. And you had your hair cut by Bedell Sassoon himself.
Yeah.
And once you were at the airport in Montreal, Twiggy landed, causing the same kind of commotion that would have happened if the Beatles had landed.
Yeah.
And then you talk about meeting Kenny Levy from New York, the love of your life, and all of that. And you were married twice. And during all this, you were never conventional. So while you were married with these two young girls, there were people that were just moms that were bringing their kids to the park and having coffee or whatever they were doing. And you were working at British Overseas Airways. And I just want to ask you what that job entailed for. And you would go off to work. So it's almost like your husband was the house husband and you were the primary worker and the chief sort of, right?
Well, by the time I met the second husband, so I quit British Airways because the hours were nuts. And it was just, my kids were 2 years old and I wanted to spend more time with them. So I started working at a travel agency that had clients that were equivalent of Wall Street or, you know, Madison Avenue. It was right downtown and, you know, all these movers and, you know, titans of the universe. So I did that for a while. And then I met the husband, but I knew him from high school. And I never really paid much attention to him because I thought he was better looking than I was. He was prettier than me. And I thought, oh, no, I don't want that. But I didn't know I was pretty at the time. But anyways, so I never paid attention to him. And then we ran into each other. I had just come back from backpacking through India and staying in all these ashrams and Borneo and all over the place. And I had just come back and I had rings on my toes and, you know, coal around. This was 79.
Very, very early. And you were fascinated always by travel. I think that's why you liked the job at British Overseas Airways.
Yeah, always.
But you really took chances. Like you brought your girls, I think, to Bali. Was it Bali when they were five years old? And they had they had three major trips by the time they went to school. So they're looking at school like all these little kids who are probably, you know, have had such a sheltered life. And your kids have grown up with so many people from different cultures and tastes and foods and spices. Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of fascinating. Did they love that they had that beginning? I know they didn't like it at summer camp, but did they love that they had, that they had that experience, that rich, talk about a real education.
Yeah. Well, my home, when I was with Archie, who I traveled with, the very eccentric lawyer, the criminal lawyer who I traveled with and lived with for 4 years on and off, it was a tumultuous relationship. We were very much into Tibetan Buddhism and all that other stuff, Tai Chi and, you know, all that other stuff. So my home became a center, like the lamas would escape from Tibet. They'd wind up in India. Okay. Yes. And then from India, they would come to my home until they had a place to open up a sangha or a center. So there was a steady flow of these amazing people who did not speak English, but there was a steady flow of people coming to sit with them and just be in their energy.
Yes.
And one of my favorite images of that time was we lived in a three-story house. So they stayed on the third floor, the lamas. And they'd never seen TV, let alone whatever, you know, the hoo-ha.
Yes.
So they would be sitting in cross-leg on the bed watching The Roadrunner and cartoons because they didn't have to understand it. So there are these like high level lamas, like really high level, because a lot of Tibetans in Ontario heard about them and came and just did this, and they're sitting there laughing at Popeye and so that's what my kids grew up with. Wow. But you know, they are so straight now. They're straight.
Yes. Yes. They
my kid, like, it's like, where did I go wrong?
You're hilarious. Helen, you are actually a hilarious, colorful, and wonderful person. There should be more people like
Thank
you. You really,
you.
You're amazing.
I'm a reflection of you, darling girl.
You're an entrepreneur. So you've done everything from working British Airways. You did the travel agency. But where you were extremely successful before your whole yoga journey was as a real estate agent, which you did for 15 years. And you were considered one of the top real estate agents in the city. You made a lot of money doing it. You were very successful. You and your husband were thought of as a power couple and the it couple and envied by all and all of this kind of stuff. And then you got very sick.
So the husband and I spent 6 weeks traveling through Japan and I ate way too much raw sushi.
Yes.
And I came back and I was really sick. I got this really undiagnosable form of hepatitis that laid me flat for 2 years.
That's right. That's right.
And I mean, I was in bed.
Yes.
And, you know, I had more energy. I had like enough energy for 10 people.
Yes.
And then I got Epstein-Barr and chronic fatigue, and nobody had that. That was in, I was 38.
Wow.
And I was really, I'm talking like could not get out of bed. So I loved selling real estate until I stopped loving it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had, I'm not going to name drop, but you would know who I worked with.
Yes.
You would know. I mean, I called them my heads with bread. They had money. They had money. They had lots of money, and they were fun. Most of them were fun to work with, except for the last person I worked with, who really I didn't like. But anyways, they were funny. I was invited to the best weddings and bar mitzvahs and divorce parties. And my life was just a lot of gay guys, you know, that was big, you know, they were all dying. So let's just party till we drop. And that, it was that kind of real estate company. It was run by Daryl Kent, who was really highly respected gay guy. So there were about 300 agents, and easily 200 of them, 250 were gay.
Wow.
So it was horrible because it was, they were dying. Mm-hmm. And yet nobody knows how to die better than a gay guy who knows he's going to die. It's like the let's take the Concorde to London and get on the Orient Express. And I had a collection of flapper clothes, so I would lend them my clothes to wear on the Orient Express.
Oh my God.
I have pictures of them. Anyways, yeah. So it was just the best. I mean, if you're going to sell real estate, you want heads with bread.
Yes.
That's who you want.
You did it in style. But when you got sick, is that when you decided to go to the Kripalu Center in Massachusetts to go? And this was going to be like a spa yoga retreat, but it really was a pivotal life-changing moment for you. Is that correct?
It was, yes. And it was anything but spa, trust
me.
Yes, it was. I mean, lots of yoga, meeting amazing people. I'd already been very, very interested in yoga for a long time. Yeah, meeting amazing, amazing people. And yeah, and then I came back and started doing a ton of yoga, like at different studios.
Yes.
And then one day I drove by the Medical Arts Building, you know, the one on St. George.
Okay, I was going to ask you, was that the one on St. George in between Bernard and Bloor?
Yes.
I can't believe it. I know that building.
At the corner.
I love that building. I know that building very well.
A gorgeous Art Deco building.
Wow.
Gorgeous.
And on a whim, and you decided to do it.
I have no idea. And then it just became really busy because of where we were.
Yes.
We had lots of movie stars, like lots and lots, because we were right near Yorkville.
Yes.
So they would come and they felt comfortable there because nobody bugged them. I mean, they could walk in and it was a very, my favorite, I have to say, was Willem Dafoe. It was all I could do. I wanted to touch him all the time. Just his voice, just say something, please. Anyways, it was just the fun place. And I did something that nobody had ever done before. I had different styles of yoga under one roof.
You did. You
and
did
Kripalu,
Kundalini, Hatha, Iyengar, Restorative, pre and postnatal, Pilates, belly dance, Tai Chi, Qigong, and of course, many different styles of meditation as well. And this was unheard of at the time. Like now that sounds like something that might happen. But in those years, that's when you got the reputation of being the godmother of yoga in Toronto.
Yeah.
You were named one of the top studios and you knew how to bring people together. And then your business sense of being such a successful real estate agent. And I think all of these pieces just came together in a perfect storm in a great way to just make this the place. At one point you had 58 people working for you and this was everything. In fact, I just want to give you some of the wonderful things. So just people just loved it and it was amazing. But I want to go back for one second to before this yoga studio. You loved this yoga so much back in Massachusetts at Kripalu that one of your chores was to clean out toilets and to make beds. And your family knew, your daughters knew that you were serious because you had never done this. In fact, there was a picture of you at the ironing board, one picture of you ironing a shirt, and they took the picture because it had never happened before since.
Never.
And yet, so what motivated you so much to want to do this? Because it sounds like it was not very pleasant work.
No, it actually was amazingly, it was, even though the work wasn't great, we had a great team. So what motivated me is that I got well. Okay, I got well. And I went back to work with a vengeance. And a woman, my favorite, one of my favorite healers, Nida Bruno, who was my chiropractor, came to one of my parties. I have these parties where I have 60 women and you're going to be invited to one of them. You'll have so much fun. It'll be stupid. But anyways, I had 60 women there, like my manicurist, my hairdresser, my therapist, you know, everybody. And she came and she started yelling at me and she said, look, it's in my book. Look what you've done. You've got all these amazing, and what are you going to do with what you have, with your ability to create community? Wow. And she was really mad at me. And then, this is the truth, I swear to you, the next day, a Kripalu catalog turns up on my porch.
Wow.
And I call Nida. I go, well, I mean, thank you for the hint. But she said, I did not drop that. I said, well, who did? She said, I have no idea, but I want you to pay attention.
Wow.
No, but that's what happened. I'm still to this day, I don't know who dropped that catalog off. Yeah. So I called and I said, I'm going. Because I used to go away anyways, like for a week or so. I go to Florida to a yoga place. You know, I would do that because I worked really hard. I mean, sometimes I didn't get home till 4 a.m. Wow. doing the work. So I went there and then this spiritual lifestyle training thing came up and it was a little over 3 months. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go and I've got this fabulous clothing and I'll sit at the front desk, yes, and tell people where to go. and I'll work in the gift shop, yeah, and, you know, da, 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 da. Well, I wound up cleaning toilets, yeah, and making beds.
Wow.
And it was one of these places where you couldn't look at men. You had men sat here, women,
yes,
sat here. But it was the most colorful, interesting group of people.
Wow.
And, yes, we made beds and washed toilets, but we also danced with our brooms and we put music on. And I learned how to communicate much better. And I hoped that, you know, my ego, you know, here I am. I'm like the luckiest woman. I've got, you know, a top real estate agent. I've got a great marriage. Well, the marriage didn't survive my opening up the yoga studio. Everything changed in our lives.
Do you think it's because you changed and you became,
yes,
deeper and more spiritual and suddenly somewhere in the book you mentioned you would see this woman who, you know, had just bought a $1 million home and was complaining that there wasn't a 4-car garage. And you were like, so beyond that, you had seen things
cares?
And who cares? You were getting it. You finally got it in such a big way. And you didn't keep it to yourself. You got it, but you were sharing it with us. You sensed that there was a need. It wasn't there. And so you created it. But my,
yeah,
God, like it was so super successful. Were you scared at the beginning as you were doing it? Were you thinking, what am I doing?
Well, so what happened was I was going to 3 different yoga studios doing 3 different styles of yoga. And I spoke with the yoga teachers who I really respected and admired. And I said, this is my idea. And every one of them said, are you out of your mind? No teachers are going to want to teach there. It's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. Decide on one style of yoga. And I said, I'm going to 3 different places.
Yes.
And I want to be able to have, like, some days I want to be loved up. So I want to do Kripalu. Some days I want to be smacked around. So I want to do Bikram. You know,
Bikram. You worked with Bikram.
Oh, he's, ugh.
I know. He ended up not having the best reputation. But what was that like when you first met him and worked with him and learned his 26 poses and learned all of it? What was that like?
Well, I didn't work with him. I met him in LA when I went to that big party that Tara Guber gave. I decided, I think I'll go check out Bikram. And it was, no, but but I did talk to him. I talked to him because I told him that I had a studio and he was like, so what? But the man who was teaching Bikram, Sasha, beautiful man, beautiful. I was going to his classes, but none of my teachers, not one, thought it was a good idea. And they all said, you're going to go under. But it was the opposite. Like I had teachers coming, please, can I teach there? Please, can I teach there? And so, you know what it was like, Judy? Imagine a sacred space,
yes,
like a synagogue or a church or a mosque where every religion is welcome.
Mm. Beautiful.
Don't you have chills?
Of course.
I have chills when I say it.
Of course.
So I was just telling to my friend George, who is just a really dear friend, I said, imagine, you know, I'm seeing a lot of intermarriage and I'm seeing Filipinos, because of where I live, you know, Filipinos that have white, one of the parents are white and maybe there's a black parent. And I said, that's the answer, really. In a way, that's the answer for us keeping our civilization along open and strong is saying we're all the same. I remember talking to at a party this really beautiful Black man, and we were talking about that, and he lifted his hands up and he said, "You see my palm?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "The same color as yours." I said, "Yeah." Wow. "My tongue, my gums." I said, "Yeah, we're all the same."
Yes.
"It's just the outside that's different."
Yes.
So that's how I felt about the yoga studio, because, you know, unfortunately, my biggest problem with the studio was dealing with the teachers. I'm going to be honest. It was not the students, because there's a little too much ego with the teachers. That was the hard part.
It was crazy. And you sold things. You sold oils and incense and yoga wear and yoga accoutrements. And I love the story in the book where someone came in and said, "I have this yoga wear. It's very form-fitting and it's midriff bearing." And you went, "No, that's never going to work. Yoga clothing should be loose and lovely and white," and which I kind of agree with, by the way. And everyone, you know what that was? You could tell us. Actually, don't tell us about that just yet. We're going to go on a short commercial break. When we come back, we'll hear all about that famous yoga line that you were asked to be a part of. We'll be right back.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio. So, Helen, tell us more about the famous yoga line that you were asked to be involved with.
Well, he said, "I'll give you exclusive rights. You'll be the first yoga studio." And I said, "Well, what's it made of?" And it was, you know, I was all about, it's got to be cotton, it's got to be bamboo.
Yes.
You know, I was working on my own yoga line at the time. And he said, "Lululemon." And I said, "That, like, I can't sell stuff called Lululemon." Anyways, I mean, so my manager, I don't know if you probably, do you remember Razzle Dazzle?
Sure.
Okay, so Michelle.
Yes.
Was my manager.
Oh my God. That's crazy.
Okay. I know. And we were best. We were really close. That's a whole story. I have to write my story about her in my next book. I mean, she deserves a whole book.
Oh my God.
But, so she was my manager and she loved the clothes. And I just wanted him out of the studio. Like, what's he selling? It's like form-fitting and like, no, this is not going to happen.
Also, it was a lot of black. And you love color, which is why when we first came on camera together, you said to me, "I love that you're wearing color," because you have a big thing about color. What is it?
Okay. So I'm going to go on a bit of a rant. So, you know, really, when we started wearing black when Victoria's husband died, mm-hmm. during the turn of the century, and everybody had to go into mourning.
Yeah.
And black, my llama said, don't wear black, because it sucks the energy. Yeah. And so I don't wear black from the waist up. You'll never see me wearing black. I might wear black and white, but it's mostly white.
Yes.
And I think that women especially wear way too much black. I think we're afraid of color. We're afraid of standing out. And especially when you get to a certain age, you believe that black makes you look better. It's more slimming. I had a very interesting thing happen in California. I was just there and one of my best friends there was showing me something that she wanted to wear to her son's wedding. Her son is a kind of a famous musician and he's marrying kind of, you know, so there was going to be people flying in from all over the place. And they're getting married in a barn in Wisconsin, but never mind. So, and I said, "No, you have to have color." And she wears black, gray, and beige. And I said, "Stop. You have to stop." So she said, "But that's all I wear." I said, "Go and buy some scarves."
Yes.
So she bought some colorful
Lovely.
Scarves. And when I saw her again, I said, "How do you feel when you're wearing that? I can't believe the difference."
Yes. Yes.
Wear it around your face. You have to wear black, but wear color. And her face lit up. glowed.
Yes.
Because black is somber. Yes, there's an elegance. Yes, all of that. But, you know, and also think about this, Judy. Black came back with a vengeance during the Reagan era when, you know, it was all power suits and women were wearing huge. Do you remember that? Like huge. So it's black, you know, power dressing. Well, we don't need to power dress anymore. We need to love dress, dress with love.
Absolutely. I know you talk about Iris Apfel, who just died at 103, I loved her. And she was just a cornucopia of kaleidoscope of color, symphony of bright, beautiful oranges and pinks and happy colors. Yeah. And she wore it so well. And I know you talk about her as well. I can't believe that you met and watched Deepak Chopra teach from his throne and actually led a silent yoga class at a huge speaking engagement that he was appearing at. So instead of giving a long bio, like I always do before the show, you introduced him by this wonderful yoga sequence that you were invited. What an honor to do. And you did that twice, doing that 3-minute yoga sequence. Can you tell us more about Deepak Chopra and your connection with him?
Okay. I am honored. I have to tell you, well, first of all, I'll tell you how that happened. I was the second person in Canada, as far as I know, I could be wrong, to be certified by him in a small group to teach his meditation. Wow. And he came for his first big gig in Toronto, first, like 3,300 people. He'd been on the cover of Time magazine. And the person who was doing it, Deepak, said, call Helen and see if she'll introduce me. Well, he hates flowery. He's the best in the world. He hates it that he doesn't like it. So the guy said to me, I have an idea. He said, why don't you go on stage? We'll put a spotlight on you. There'll be total silence. You'll go on stage. You'll do a 3-minute yoga routine. And then you'll go on a podium and you'll introduce him. And I said, okay, that sounds like a great idea. When's he coming? 2 weeks. I thought, okay, this will be interesting. So I had an outfit made, like a leotard, because, of course, Lululemon, you know, forget it. Anyways, and one of my teachers at the studio was a choreographer, and I said, can you do this? So can I tell the whole story?
Yes, I love this story.
Are you all right with
that? I love
it. So it was a full room, 3,300 people. Oh. There were a row, 75 people in a row of my friends and family, who I was really nervous about. And then there were chairs on the stage. I mean, it was nuts. And so I practiced the routine. I visualized it every day. I practiced it. I visualized my doing it. I saw myself on the stage, everybody loving it, getting off. So I'm in the green room, when you know what that is, just before, and people are still filing in, and I'm pacing back and forth in the hallway, and Deepak's in his room. The door's open. He says, what's going on? I said, I'm really nervous. He said, what are you nervous about? I said, I can't believe I agreed to do this. I said, what if I go on stage? All I had was a microphone. And he said, what? I said, I can't believe I agreed to do this. Am I out of my mind? My stomach is churning. I thought I was going to throw up. And he said, so what, tell me the main thing. I said, I'm really worried that I'm going to pass wind in front of 3,400 people with a microphone. So it's going to be even worse. And he said, and you know, he does that Indian thing, this thing. He said, well, maybe you're meant to. And I said, that doesn't help. That doesn't help me. He said, go back to the room.
Yes.
Do what you know. Sit there, visualize, breathe. You'll be fine.
Wonderful.
I was more than fine. Wonderful. I was fabulous. Wonderful. And people, I still meet people. And this was like, I don't know, 30 years ago. And you couldn't video it then. There was no videoing in Roy Thompson Hall. No videoing allowed. I still meet people who talk about it. And then the producer asked me to come to the next one, which was 6 months later. And do another one. But I never, when I taught yoga, maybe I had 30 people. I did not have 3,300 people. But it was an amazing lesson in believing what you're capable of doing and letting go of ego.
Yes, yes.
Because really, I had to be prepared that I was going to make a really rude sound.
Yes.
In front of all those
people. But it's surrendering, right? It's letting go and surrendering and trusting the universe to unfold as it should. You must have felt elated and exhilarated when that was over.
Yeah. And you asked me what Deepak is like. I will tell you that He is such a good person. I was at a retreat. There were about 70 of us in Seattle, around Seattle, years ago. And I hung out with him a bit. But more importantly, I saw him with the people that he works with. And just how real he is. Yes. And the level of conversation. Like, he's real. Like, he walks his talk. Mm-hmm. He goes on silent retreats. He goes into the desert.
He's
a good guy.
I've always loved him. So I'm so fascinated that you had this lovely relationship, You went on a silent 10-day retreat. A lot of people didn't make it past the third day. And, right, they just couldn't do it. And I know this is very difficult. And you're a communicator. You're a talker. Yes. You're a connector. You're a touchy-feely person. So I can't imagine, first of all, what was that like for you? Did you enjoy it? How did you survive it? Because that sort of is not you, but you did it.
Well, I've done it a few times. And there's different styles. And there's the one that I did, the one that I wrote about, which was called the Silent Yoga Meditation Retreat from Hell, was a style that somebody warned me that it was much, much harder than the other ones. Mm-hmm. And it was. It was great, ultimately, actually. It was a cleansing. Mm-hmm. I mean, imagine, Judy, no looking at anybody in the eye, no talking, no reading, no nothing, no movement, like no yoga for 10 days. You could walk
outside, you said, yes,
meditate at the same time. But, you know, I'm not an early riser. I go to bed really late and get up late. So I had to adjust that because we would get up at 5 in the morning.
Yes. Breakfast. You made a whole sort of a list of what a day looked like. It was fascinating. Like rise at 4 or 5 a.m., you know, meditate, go to breakfast, meditate, go for lunch, meditate. So it went on and on. Like it was quite a rigorous, you know.
It was, but I would do it again. I wouldn't do that one. I wouldn't do that particular style, but I've done them since. I went to another one near Bancroft not that long ago, which was beautiful. The Dharma Center, if anybody's interested, Dharma. Nice. They do beautiful focused meditation. And the people that lead it are just beautiful. And they actually, the two people that led it, had been to my home to meet the lamas.
Wow.
So they remembered me. You know, I had so many people coming. But anyways, so that's the definite. It's done with much more compassion and it's not as rigorous. I would never do the other one, except that I met those two, you know, that woman, right?
Yes.
You know,
yes,
the story about how we went shopping after.
Yes. Oh, that's the best. You just, when it was all over, you ate and you went shopping and you just, there's so many fascinating, lively characters.
Yeah.
And you also had so many gurus visit your studio. And I'm not going to tell the story, the big, big story in the book about that guru and what happened when
the Armani guru.
Oh my God. What a story that is. What a story. And how you went out with your friends, the girls, and you had to be called back to the studio to deal with what happened. So you were doing this for almost 15 years. You were at the top of the top. It was the place of the place. You got such great reputation. You did TV shows and writing for various wellness magazines. And I also found this fascinating because you were never a journalist. And you actually wrote that the only time you ever had written really was writing ads back in the days of real estate.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, when your clients were these high profile Canadian cultural creatives and politicians and all that stuff, but you suddenly were writing. Where did this all come from? This writing and this creativity in every way.
You know, people, friends of mine and people who've read my book have said that I write the way I speak.
Yes. Yes.
And basically the writing I was asked to do, there was a wellness, I was doing a column and I was also doing a column. Do you remember that magazine that you used to pick up at the subway, that newsletter? I forgot the name of it, but I did a yoga thing.
Wow.
So I was out there a lot.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I was in Chatelaine, like all women's W magazine. And I didn't write for them, but I just basically write the way I speak.
Yes. It's colloquial and chatty and real, but
you're
also an excellent writer. Like there's some beautiful, I kept writing down beautiful pieces of, you know, beautiful phrases. There were just some gorgeous, I've listed some of them, gorgeous, gorgeous pieces of writing that just really
Thank
jumped
you.
Off the page. The writing is exquisite. What happened, Helen, at this point to make the whole thing dissolve at the time. Before we hear more, we're going to go on a short commercial break. More with Finding Your Bliss and Helen Goldstein when we come back.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back. This is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740. And just before the break, Helen, I was asking you about what point your business began to unravel.
Okay. So I will tell you one thing. With very little exception, running a yoga studio is not a way to write livelihood.
Yes.
Okay, especially if you have a bit of a heart. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of people that, you know, were sick mentally, physically, they couldn't afford it. They were poor. Mm-hmm. And they would say, I can't afford this. Can you give me? So I'd give them free classes and I was paying the teachers per person. And we didn't really keep track of who wasn't paying. So every month, I mean, I had RSPs and I had, you know, I had some savings. And every month I'd pull money out of my personal savings.
Wow.
I never personally made any money in 15 years, ever.
After the real estate where you made so much money, right?
Like where I made so much money.
Yeah.
So much money. I mean, I had, it was interesting, Heather, I did one-on-one yoga with Heather Reisman, who, by the way, is a doll, like really a lovely human being. And she was really interested in bringing more yoga stuff to this her store. So like an idiot, I told her what to buy. So she became, because we had a store.
Yes.
So she became my, what can I say, my competition.
Right.
But the bottom line was I made a lot of mistakes. I let way too many, you know, anybody who said they were a friend of mine, go on in. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then one of the, when a woman I know who taught for a very short time at the studio approached me and said, do you want to sell? And I said, Lord, thank you, God. Thank you. Yes, yes, I do. So she introduced me to her boyfriend, who was the CFO at Royal Bank.
Yes.
And we met a couple of times, not my favorite person, but that's okay. I don't, you know, I don't call bankers my favorites.
Yes.
Anyways, we had an agreement. I then got asked to go to Shanghai to be the keynote presenter for Shanghai Yoga Week.
Wow.
This guy decided he was going to, he had seven yoga studios, didn't know anything about yoga, but he'd been on Air Canada, saw my column in En Route and asked me if I would do that. So my lawyers, I had very good lawyers. One of them was an old high school friend who took really good care of me. We had a contract. Her boyfriend kept avoiding signing the contract, mm-hmm. avoiding it. I took off for China, just wouldn't sign it. And I kept hearing that there were difficulties in the studio with the staff and him. I came back. All my stuff, my personal stuff, had been moved out into a locker.
Oh, God.
They took over the lease. I was 1 month delayed paying rent.
Brutal.
They renegotiated the lease and they never signed a contract.
Wow.
And we had an agreement and he reneged on it. And then I find out that he was one of the people, do you remember that Ramparts scandal years ago? Mm-hmm. He was one of the people. I didn't check him out because I didn't have the time. And he basically took over the studio, screwed people left, right, and center, didn't pay teachers, had a sale. Like a half price sale and then close the doors. Like no warning at all. No warning.
Brutal.
And I came back. I didn't know what was happening. My manager, who I loved, Amanda Clayton, just an amazing manager, just kept saying, there's weird stuff here. We're not liking it. People are not happy. But I thought, like, how bad could it be? Mm. Anyways, the banks, because he didn't sign off on anything, came after me.
Oh.
He went bankrupt. He bankrupted the studio.
That
So they came after me personally. And just when my mother died, they went after the little she left me. So I basically went from being in a pretty good financial situation to being homeless for 2 years. My credit went down to yuck. And I had to stay at friends' places, and they would say, come stay with me for 2 months or stay with me for 3 months. And it was great. I never slept on a couch. I slept on 1,000 thread count sheets. I mean, I was really well taken care of. Yeah. I'm a very good guest. I'm really a good guest. So that was 2 years of that.
Yeah. Wow.
And then my daughter gave birth to twins in California, yes. And one of them has cerebral palsy,
oh boy,
special needs. Oh. So then I started spending 6 months of the
in
year
California,
there.
Yes.
And then, I don't know, I got my crap together, and now I'm not anywhere where I could be, nowhere. I mean, I have to work. I can't stop
but
working.
Helen,
but that's okay.
You always, like, in spite of tragedies, we talked about this earlier, your beloved sister passed away of breast cancer, which I think really killed you. And you lost your parents, you had broken marriages, but somehow there was something in Helen Goldstein that I always think of Jack Canfield. I think he's the one who said, you know, fall down 7 times, get up the 8th. You always got up. You always do get up. What drives you so relentlessly, no matter what is going on?
Okay, I'll tell you. First of all, I have the DNA of a father who lost 15 siblings, all of his cousins, you know, his cousins, uncles, aunts, so I have that DNA. I have the DNA of a mother who grew up very privileged, who lost all her brothers and sisters, saw things that no 19-year-old should ever see. So I have that DNA. I have survivor DNA.
Yes.
And I remember my banker, I had an amazing banker, and I went in to see him when everything was just going, like, I could just see I was going to get screwed. And he told me what to do. And he said, I don't understand why you're not crazy. And when I told him, he said, okay, I get it. Judy, that's not to say that I'm not crazy sometimes, enough times. Like, I've had way too much crap. I have a very good friend, my friend Lena, who's an amazing healer, amazing. She said, I've never met anyone like you who attracts more crap, because I do. It's like I've got this black cloud hanging over me.
But you
really
rise
do.
Above. You rise
I
above.
I do, because what is the choice?
What is the choice? What is the choice?
What choice do I have?
I applaud you. I have to just say that I applaud you, because really,
thank you.
Reading parts of your story, I think, my God, how did this woman not only survive, but thrive, and always look at it as another challenge to climb, to circumvent, to do. And you just have a sparkle, like you're a lover of life.
I'm living in the most gorgeous apartment facing a ravine. I have a beautiful young man living with me. We're roommates. He's George, who's been helping me. I am so blessed. I wake up, I look outside at my birds, and I say, thank you, God. Like, I feel that, you know? No, I genuinely do. And I often will say, I feel blessed. I feel blessed. I've traveled enough through India and other places to know that first world problems, come on. I'll always have a meal. I'll always have a place to live.
Absolutely.
So, you know, for me, I really mean this, an attitude of gratitude.
Absolutely.
If you cannot cultivate that, forget it.
Absolutely. Where do you practice, Helen? What's yoga like for you these days?
I will be honest with you. I'm not doing as much as I used to, but I do meditate every day.
Wonderful.
I feel meditation for me is what keeps me going.
Absolutely.
And I don't miss a day, or I try not to. It's really important.
That's beautiful. What made you dye your hair purple?
Well, my friend Noemi, who is a Argentinian documentary filmmaker who's beautiful, has long blonde hair and, you know, da, da, da. I let my hair grow white.
Yes.
And she came over to visit
horrifying.
Me and she goes, "Yo, Helen, you can't do this." I said, "Why?" She said, "You look old." And I said, "I am old." She said, No. So I went to Shoppers to buy shampoo, and I noticed Manic Panic purple. This is 20 years ago almost, okay?
Wow.
Nobody had purple hair.
Oh my God.
And I said, "I'll take that." And I went home and splattered it. And the funny thing was, I was living in the beach at the time. I would walk along the street and all these people would say, oh, I love your hair. And the reason I keep my hair purple, my kids know that in my gurney, when they're taking me out, you know,
forbid,
I better
yes.
have purple hair. Okay. It's forever. But honestly, Judy, it makes people smile. Yeah. And people, I'm not this decrepit little old lady with white hair because I'm little. I'm a force to be reckoned with. Right. And when people stop me and they say, oh my God, I love your hair. And I tell them, why don't you do this? Oh no, I can't. I why not? Like, life's too short to have boring hair.
Absolutely.
So I love it. And it really, can you imagine looking in such a way that you actually make people happy? And that's what it's about.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
I mean, I'm going to give you like a huge virtual hug,
yeah.
you know?
But I give you one back. Yeah, I give you one back.
That's all that matters.
100%. What is bliss for Helen Goldstein?
Bliss is, I have a few things. Being with my family in California, I love them.
Yes.
Even though they roll their eyes at what I do a lot. They're very, tattooed at 70. Hello, mother, you know, only people who've been in jail have tattooed their fingers. What are you doing? So they worry about me a lot. But no, being with my family, I have an amazing circle of friends. That's bliss for me. That going for a walk in my ravine, gardening on my tiny little deck and shopping at Salvation Army, you know, all of that, like hanging out with meeting great people and helping people change their lives. Mm-hmm. I mean, I am now apparently a wise old woman, and using that wisdom really in the best way, without arrogance, but lots of compassion and understanding. And it's not that I took any training. It's just that I've lived long enough to know what's important. And I guess that's it. Like, what's important? Like, the other day with George and I went for a walk and I said, I have to hug this tree. And I did. I mean, I hug trees and I hug strangers. That's bliss. Okay. That's bliss.
I love that.
That's utter bliss, is walking along there, somebody stopping to talk to me and ending the conversation with a hug.
That's so great.
There's nothing better than that.
What's next for you?
Two things. Okay. So I'm working on an amazing project, and I know that you interviewed Jack Canfield. So the project I'm working on is with this couple. His name is Brooks Cole. Her name is Sabine Schultz. And then they're living in Barcelona, and they are branders. They helped help Jack Canfield and lots of names, Santana. And a beautiful couple in Toronto who are pioneers in health and wellness. And you met them, actually.
Yes.
Mindy Blackstein and Jeff Kipple, who have this vision of creating an app that makes you accountable. And we're using AI in the absolute best way imaginable. So Judy, you wake up one morning and you say, I want to learn how to speak Spanish or whatever. Okay.
Nice.
But you know, you're not really doing it, but you really want to do it. So we help you connect with five people. It could be less, it could be more, globally, that are going to support you. And you, Judy, have something that they need.
Nice.
So it's like Facebook on steroids, where we're building a community where we're really helping each other, built out of love.
Nice.
And Mindy and Jeff have this amazing book out called Ridiculous. And the motto is just, I'm not going to say the whole motto, but be ridiculous.
Yes, just
go
do it.
Crazy.
Just do it. What is the best way for people to contact you and connect with you on social media? And when are we going to see this book?
I'm waiting to get it published. I've got it. You know, thank you for making that connection. So we'll see.
That's so exciting.
Thanks to you. I'm hoping to have it published within the next few months.
And on social media, you can reach Helen at Helen Yogini 108. Let me spell that for you. It's H-E-L-E-N-E. Yogini 108. And on Facebook, you can find her at Helen Pack Goldstein. That's spelled P-A-C-H Goldstein. Helen also has a beautiful line of magic skincare with some fabulous healing creams. To check that out, all you have to do is go to her website at HelenePack.com. That's HelenePack.com. And be sure to stay tuned for a new app that Helen is working on called Accountable You. It's a system designed to help everyone stay accountable to their goals, wishes, desires, and dreams. As Helen mentioned earlier, the team working on this includes Brooks Cole of Solo, who's worked with Jack Canfield, Michael Beckwith, Santana, and Disney, just to name a few. Helen, it's really been, it's been
a pleasure,
a delight, and an honor to meet with Helen Goldstein on Finding Your Bliss. It's really been amazing. Thank you very much.
This has been blissful for me. You want to know what my bliss is? This.
Same,
this is my
same.
Bliss.
Thank you.
Thank you, dear
thank
heart.
Thank you so much. The same to you. I would like to thank our wonderful guest, Helen Goldstein, for being on the show today. Also, thank you to Meg Ruffin, Siobhan Kiley, producer Olivia Weatherall, audio engineer Juliana Yannicello, senior editor Lauren Kaminsky, video editor Sierra Brown Rodriguez, audio producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And I have to make a very special thank you this week to Barbecue Pro Inc., who came to save the day and fix our barbecue for a very special Friday night dinner that we're having. So thank you, Barbecue Pro. And of course, a great big thank you to our fabulous sponsor, the Create Fertility Center. For everyone here, I'm Judy Liebrack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.